Well, we'll see if you still think that after I get done. See, that's probably the difference between the guy and the girl. The guy wants the wedding over. The girl wants it to last. Because any guy that thinks that the wedding is for him is quite mistaken. So turn to Judges chapter 18 while you're doing that. I have a little story to tell you once I get moved over here. It says, trouble, things are going wrong when you call your wife and tell her you would like to eat out tonight, and she says there will be a sandwich for you on the porch. The gypsy fortune teller looks at your palm, shakes her head, and offers to refund your money. Everyone avoids you the morning after the company office party. And the worst player on the golf course wants to play you for money. And, you know, for a lot of people, when it comes to, like, in my experience with golf, that was just an excuse to exercise and get your walking in for the day, depending how you play. So in Judges chapter 18, we're down all the way at the end. And in here we have the last two verses to go over before we go into chapter 19. And in 18, chapter 28, it says, but ye shall... Oh, whoops, that's the wrong one. That's a J, but that's not Judges. And Judges chapter 18, I think it's verse 30. We'll see when I actually get there. Yeah, and the children of Dan set up the graven image, and Jonathan, the son of Gershom, the son of Manasseh, he and his sons were priests to the tribe of Dan until the day of captivity of the land. And they set them up Micah's graven image, which he had made all the time that the house of God was in Shiloh. And so you see, basically, in this particular instance, here's a people, and you see the direction they're going, and that direction never changes. I want you to think about how this has progressed. One Levite decided not to do what God wanted him to do, to go where God did not tell him to go, and to do a job God did not tell him to do. And his singular choice becomes a major portion of how this whole story plays out. Would the tribe of Dan have turned in to find out about Micah's gods if they hadn't known and heard the voice of this young man? So one of the things to think about is sometimes what seems to be a small choice, just, you know, it's not a big deal. Yeah, it can be a big deal because you don't know how it plays out the other end. Now, God knows, but we don't always know on the choices that you make. If you live long enough, you're going to look back at your life and you are going to see some choices you made that at the time you thought were insignificant, and yet they are huge on the impact of your life. I've had many of those in my life. I've had many cases where the Lord helped me or made me, depending on your point of view, make a choice. And the choice, by being obedient to that and not fighting it, well, at least not fighting it too much, ended up in making large differences in where I ended up living. My life was influenced by a lot of people in my life. For example, when I moved back out here after I drove my car after I got out of the military, I just wanted to get anywhere west of the Mississippi River. I didn't care where it was. I just did not want to be east of the Mississippi River. And so I came back home and went to church, ended up meeting my wife the first day I was at church. Not that I talked to her much at all, but I did meet her. And then going to that church, I happened to meet a whole bunch of neat people like the Kaisers. That's where I met Mrs. Kaiser the first time. And guess what she was doing? Same thing she was doing here. Playing the organ, serving. Anytime there was something going on in the kitchen, she was in there doing stuff. I didn't learn that for about, that happened about a month later, because they had the Living Christmas pageant over in Centralia. And it was the first Church of God at that point. I think it's Centralia Community Church or something like that now. The name's changed. And they had people that had all these different animals and stuff that would bring them in. They had all these little scenes you would act out. Well, Mrs. Kaiser in the back with some other ladies were making chili and all this other stuff for people to eat in between doing all of that stuff. So I learned a little bit about her then. But see, that whole choice to even have gotten there was predicated on a whole bunch of other choices. I had many other opportunities to go other places. I was told I should go to Pennsylvania because the University of Pennsylvania offered veterans a free ride. to get a four-year degree. And I was thinking, that's not a bad idea. Then I realized that the first lieutenant I had that was my division head was an absolute idiot, and he was a double E, and he got it from the University of Pennsylvania. So I kind of decided right then and there that probably isn't a place to go to get a degree that actually means something. And so that kind of ruled that out. You know, there are some other relationships that I had that could have very easily determined me going to other places. I have friends living in other states throughout the U.S. You know, there were some opportunities that could have happened, but allowing God, or at least giving in to God eventually, led in the direction and the path that he wanted me to go. Because if I wouldn't have come out here and I wouldn't have gone to Centralia, I would have never ended up in a Bible Baptist church. I would have never had a clue about the fact that there was what the differences between the Bibles were. Now, to be completely fair, growing up Lutheran and Methodist and having a Good News for Modern Man Bible is not exactly the revelation of having great Bible knowledge. I mean, let's just be honest. The best thing about the one I had, it was either that one or the other Bible my mom got me, had little pictures of little stick figures in it. Whichever one that is, that might be the good news. And so it's like that was the height of my Christianity. Now, my mom did write some verses in there from Psalms and other stuff like that that, you know, probably would have been really good for me to learn. Not that I learned them, but, you know, probably would have been good for me. But if you're young, some of these choices that you make, you can't see how far-reaching the effects of those choices are. Now, I can see some of them now, but I'm sure when I get to glory, God's going to show me a whole bunch of more, and I'm going to be like, wow, I can't believe I didn't see that. You know, that kind of thing. Well, the opposite is just as true. Here's one young man's choice. And what's the end result of it? You have a whole tribe that's gone astray and stayed that way and never got out of it. Now, with that thought, turn to chapter 19 in Judges. And it says, "And it came to pass in those days when there was no king in Israel, and there was a certain Levite sojourning on the side of..." Already, let's just start. We don't even have to finish this verse. We can stop right here. "And it came to pass in those days there was no king in Israel." You notice the little thing here? There's no king. There's no king. There's no king. Yeah, there was a king. It was God, but they didn't want him. So when they're saying there is no king, understand that is a people that has already made a choice to reject their true king because they wanted to be like other people. There's a lot of people who grow up in school and go to high school and then they realize they want to be like somebody else. They don't want to be who they are. They want to look like somebody, talk like somebody, act like somebody. I mean, you see it all the time. The easiest way to see it is watch little kids in sports. They will be the lousiest players on the entire team of whatever sport it is, but they have got some mannerisms down of whoever it is that they like in that sport. Why? They're trying to be like somebody else. And the second part it says, "And there was a certain Levite sojourning on the side of Mount Ephraim." Once again, we got another Levite. You're supposed to be there for God. You are set apart to the work of God. What are you doing wandering all over the place? And by the way, that can be said for a lot of Christians, like, where are you going? What are you getting into? You're a Christian. You're supposed to be an ambassador for Christ. You're supposed to be a living example of the Lord Jesus Christ on this earth. What are you doing? I mean, let's just face it. I mean, I'm not trying to be I guess I am trying to be a little preachy. It's like, you ought to be ashamed of yourself. You know what's wrong with most people in America? They can't even be ashamed anymore. You know, it used to be a time and age, you know, that, you know, you'd be ashamed of what you do. Your face would turn red and everything else. Now, if your face turns red, it's because you're acting. It's not real. Because there's nothing real left. We understand most of the people, if you're here today, you are one of the last people to realize what real is. Because whatever you think real is, understand today, what's real? I can go to AI and make a video clip of whoever I want saying whatever I want. And unless you're very studied, you are not going to know the difference. unless potentially you know the person, you may not know the difference. Have you thought about that? There are people out there that are promulgating beliefs and teachings that are not true. They're lies. But guess what? I saw it on YouTube. I saw it on TikTok. It's got to be true. There's a website. This person says this, right? It doesn't make it true. I'll give you an example. I was talking with somebody recently about the Holocaust. Well, here, I'll give you a difference of opinion on the Holocaust. You can read what you want to find on YouTube and everything else today. I talk to people who actually liberated people from those camps. I don't care what modern people who are younger than I am think happened at the Holocaust. Why? Because I talk to people who were there, who saw it, who heard it, who smelled it, who from somewhere between 15 to 20 miles away said every hair on their body was just like, this is not a good place to be, and hadn't seen or heard anything yet. So be careful in what's real in your life. I'll give you an example. Put it through this filter and find out if it's real. It'll help you clean out a lot of different things. Boy, if you just took the book of Proverbs and some of the stuff in the book of Psalms and you applied that to all the people who your so-called friends are, you may not have very many friends left. There might be a lot of other issues going on. So we're talking about this sojourner, and he's on the side of Mount Ephraim in verse 1, who took to him a concubine out of Bethlehem, Judah. Well, in the Bible, a concubine is kind of like a lesser wife. I mean, I don't know how else to put it. They are a wife because they're called a wife. We'll see that a little bit later. But their social standing and all the everything else is a little different. Now, for a Levite, it appears in the Bible there's only two tribes they can get their wives from. They have to get it from Levi or from Judah. We can see this if we go back and read the book of Genesis. But what we see here is there's a lot of men today that are no different than this Levite. They're sojourning around. And I'm not meaning waiting on the Lord. Because understand, there's a totally difference between sojourning and waiting on the Lord. Waiting on the Lord is miserable. I hate it. I don't like it. It's God trying to teach you to be patient. It's God telling you, guess what? Sit down and be quiet for a while. I don't like that. I like to know the plan. Okay, what's the next step? I'm not happy with that either. I want to know the next couple past that. And God's like, no, I'm only going to give you this one right here, and then you just got to be comfortable with that. I personally don't like that. I find it very irritating. But what is it? It's God trying to reach you and teach you some things along the way. Because if he gave you the whole plan, you'd probably give up before it got started. Or you'd just make a worse mess out of it. But there are a lot of times when God wants to have some personal time with us, and when he's doing that, he needs us to be quiet. Now, let's just face it, most of our relationship with God is us going to him in prayer and asking for stuff. And I'm not saying that's wrong. It's not. But how many times do we go into an attitude of prayer and decide to be silent and ask the Lord to speak to us, to have that communication come back? How much different possibly could have been this Levite's life if he was doing what God wanted him to do? We see in verse 2, it says, "And his concubine played the whore against him and went away from him unto her father's house to Bethlehem, Judah, and was there 4 whole months. So let's just face it, the Bible has a way of talking about modern society. I don't know about you and where you live, but probably on your block or down your street, there's somebody there that's got a mixed marriage. It means they've been married more than once. And there could be kids from both of the marriages or multiple marriages, and you end up with this whole mess of things. Why? Because we don't do it God's way. And yet we're so surprised that there's these young men out there that, let's just face it, they're not helpful to society as a whole. And it's not just young men. I mean, there's older men. 20s and 30s. You'll see them out on the side of the road holding a cardboard sign. I know exactly what my dad and grandpa would say about that. It's really simple. Get off your, well, I can't use the word they would use, but you need to get off it and go get a job. You know what their excuse would probably be? Well, I can't make the money that, you know, I think I deserve to be paid. Well, you're probably not worth the money that you think you deserve to be paid. It's really the problem. And by the way, you have to keep showing up at work. I mean, day after day, not just, well, I showed up one day and I went there about 3 or 4 days later and they were upset with me. I just don't understand what their problem is. And we wonder why we have a problem in America when men have lost the ability to work. See, it used to be a whole different thing growing up. When I was growing up, you know, either your parents found you jobs or you found you jobs in the summer a lot of times. Because they understood a few things. There is nothing worse than a teenage boy that's got way too much time on his hands. And by the way, that's changed now. Now you can put that in 20 and something year old men, if you want to use that word. I think boys is more appropriate. That what? Don't have a job. They need to be busy. Keeps them out of trouble. And by the way, how are you going to take care of a girl if you can't even take care of yourself? I've told all my girls, you meet a guy and he's really interested in you, he better get a job. He better be able to provide for you. Because if he can't, your answer should be no already. Carson. Nah, he already had a job. We'll take it easy on him. Have you thought about how many people get angry, frustrated, pick the word you want about their spouse? Because that's probably what happened with this concubine, right? Well, I married this guy and he was supposed to be the spiritual head of the household and he's not very spiritual and he's not the head of the household. And all sorts of things you can draw out of that. But for whatever reason, this concubine decided being married was not such a good deal. Wanted to go back to the old ways of doing things, maybe. I don't know. The Bible doesn't give us a back history. Not only that, after she gets fed up with this guy, she goes running around for a while, then she ends up back at dad's house. Now, that's not surprising. Let's just face it, most dads are suckers for his girls. They are. It starts at a young age, usually about shortly after they're born. They grab his finger, the rest of it's over. And it's just how it goes the rest of the way, right? So she goes back to dad's house. What does dad do? Well, he's not going to put his daughter out. He's going to bring her in and try to take care of everything else. And by the way, it's just not daddies, it's grandpas too. Grandpas are just as bad as dads, sometimes worse. But that's not 100% true. I learned this in my own life. I had my first daughter. She thought my mom was the greatest thing since sliced bread and wanted nothing to do with my dad. He would look at her and she would cry. Then Emily came along. She liked grandpa and did not like grandma. And grandpa, I think, secretly enjoyed it a lot. And then it didn't take too long after that that Emily learned that, by the way, she could get grandpa to do stuff for her. So we would go to grandma and grandpa's house and it'd be, Papa, feed me. She would sit down with her plate of food, would not eat until grandpa would come feed her. You know, which Galen was okay with Emily. She thought it was okay to have a sister until they had to share grandpa. Then it was like, it was not cool anymore to have a sister. You can take her back. You can trade her in a different one, whatever it is. It just wasn't as cool. So your mileage may vary on a girl and a grandpa and everything else. But just understand there's something there. This dad probably tried to raise his girl correctly. And think about that. He thought, here she is. She married a Levite. She married one of the good guys, right? He's one of the religious people. How wonderful this is be. And then she ends up back at your house. And then probably at some point in time thereafter, you find out why she's back at your house. And the broken heart that you feel. Because you thought your daughter was set up for success. There can be a lot of baggage and hurt that a father cannot fix. You know, let's just face it, as a dad, you want your kids' lives to be perfect. Guess what? You can't make them perfect. You can't even make your own life perfect. All you can do is the best you can do, and that's all there is. It's like I tell everybody else, my kids are pretty good, but the parents are questionable. Notice that here in verse 3, it calls her a wife. Verse 3 says, "And her husband arose and went after her to speak friendly unto her and to bring her again, having a servant with him and a couple of asses, and she brought him into her father's house. And when the father of the damsel saw him, he rejoiced to meet him." Well, a couple things is, you know, there's a couple opportunities. You can look at this sarcastically. He wanted to get that girl out of his household any way he could. That would be the first one. I don't think that's the case here. But, you know, that is a possible one. I think it's more likely that he had a lot of respect for this young man and thought he would be a great husband to his daughter and had some just really good thoughts about him. Also notice that it says there were 4 whole months this has gone on, so it's probably taken him a while to get over his anger and upset. Husbands, that's a good thing there. Don't go talking to your wife while you're all upset. No good's going to come from that. You need to calm down, get over it, get your emotions under control so you can speak logically, and then deal with the situation, whatever it is. But if you're a man and you're going to deal with your wife based on emotions, you've already lost, regardless of whether you're trying to do the right thing or not. You're supposed to dwell according to her with knowledge, not emotions. Secondly, when this husband returns, he speaks friendly to her. Let's just face it. I don't know how friendly I'd want to be if, you know, your wife was out catting around with somebody else. That doesn't really just engender a whole lot of desire to me to speak nice to her in and of myself. But nonetheless, that's what he's doing. He's coming to her and he's talking to her as though he really cares for her. He loves her. His goal is reconciliation, and he brought his servant to help pack her bags and transport her and all her stuff. Because let's just face it, guys, after you get married, you realize you need more space to travel with stuff than you had before. You know, your bathroom might have been fine for you as a bachelor, but after you move in, you realize you probably want 2 sinks. Most of the houses I've had in the last little bit of my life have had 2 sinks. I've been very thankful for that. But nonetheless, is he comes and he brings all this stuff. The father probably was very thankful that this young man decided to come back. And obviously the father thought so much of him that he wants him to stay there. I don't know about you, but if you don't like somebody, I don't want them staying at my house. You know, if they can stay in town, that's fine. You know, but if you're going to have somebody stay with you, and especially for an extended period of time, you know, you kind of want to like them. It works out a lot better that way. Judges chapter 19, in verse 4, it says, "And his father-in-law, the damsel's father, retained him, and he abode with him 3 days, so they did eat and drink and lodge there." So the father is happy to see him. He's happy to see that he has a desire to reconcile, and they basically are having a feast. In verse 5, it comes and it says, "And it came to pass on the 4th day that they arose early in the morning, and that he rose up to depart. And the damsel's father said unto his son-in-law, Comfort thine heart with a morsel of bread, and afterward go your way." He was probably a Baptist. He's like, you know, before you go anywhere, you know, we got to have some food. This reminds me of going to my Grandma Grimes' house. If you went to Grandma Grimes' house, you got fed whether you wanted to be fed or not. In fact, when you got done eating, she was coming back through with dessert or something else. You got done with dessert, then there was usually something else that tied you over until the next meal. I mean, she was in the feeding business. She knew it well. The problem with that, though, is what we find out later in verse 6. "And they sat down and did eat and drink, both of them together, for the damsel's father had said unto the man, Be content, I pray thee, and tarry all night, and let thine heart be merry." So after they get done eating breakfast, he's like, "Hey, why don't you just stay here and we'll have a good time. We'll eat lots of food, just everything will be grand." And there's an element of truth of this. Going to grandma's house, being fed was was one of the great parts of it. But leaving was miserable. Because my grandma, to me in my life, she is the definition of a lady. But when you left, it felt like your heart got ripped out of your body. Because you could be the strongest, toughest guy you know. Nobody left grandma's house without crying. It didn't matter how old you were, which boy you were of hers, which grandkid, which friend, anything else. You just felt miserable leaving her there and not staying. I'm just letting you know, not all grandparents are that way. Some grandparents, you're glad to move along. But my grandma was not that way. And I'm thankful for that. And that, I think that's kind of a little bit what's going on here. In verse 7, it says, "And when the man rose up to depart, his father-in-law urged him. Therefore, he lodged there again. And he rose again early in the morning of the fifth day to depart. And the damsel's father said, 'Comfort thine heart, I pray thee.' And they tarried until afternoon, and they did eat, both of them." Now, I don't know about you, but if you understand Bible numerics, if I was staying there, I'd stay another day. Leaving on the fifth day just isn't worth the risk. I've read enough in the Old Testament to know anything on the fifth day, just leave it. If it's the fifth hour, skip it for another hour. It is just not worth the chance, right? But no, that's not what happens. Why? We see that in verse 9. "And when the man rose up to depart, he and his concubine and his servant, his father-in-law, the damsel's father, said unto him, 'Behold now, the day draweth toward evening. I pray you, tarry all night. Behold, the day groweth to an end. Lodge here that thine heart may be merry, and tomorrow get you early on your way that thou mayest go home.'" Now, this part I think is good advice on his part. If you're going to go traveling, hey, get up early and get going. By the way, depending where you live at, you want to get up early because you want to get through some big city travel or arrange it so wherever the big city is, if you got to be in that, you can go through it when it's not overly busy. Verse 10, "But the man would not tarry that night, but he rose up and departed and came over against Jebus, which is Jerusalem. And there were with him two asses saddled. His concubine also was with him." So they're, in this particular case, they're going by the big city. I mean, you know, maybe all the roads lead to Rome, but if you're in Israel, guess what? Going by Jebus or Jerusalem, there's all sorts of roads that go from there all over the place. And so he's going by there. And it says, "And when they were by Jebus, the day was far spent. The servant said unto his master, 'Come, I pray thee, let us turn into this city of the Jebusites and lodge in it.' And his master said unto him, 'We will not turn aside hither into the city of a stranger that is not of the children of Israel. We will pass over to Gibeah.'" And he says, "Look, I don't know the people there. They're strangers. By the way, if you drive through a big city, you ought to be able to figure that out. And if you're really not sure, just drive anywhere through Portland. I don't want to stay here. I want to keep driving." And that's what he's saying here is like, hey, I don't know these people. I don't know what they're like. I want to be safe. I want to go to where my people are. And then it says, what, in the next verse? "And his master said to him, 'We will not turn aside hither into the city of a stranger.'" That means anybody who's not Jew. In the next verse, "And he said unto his servant, 'Come, let us draw near to one of these places to lodge all night, in Gibeah or in Ramah.' And they passed on and went on their way, and the sun went down upon them when they were in Gibeah, which belonged to Benjamin. And they turned aside thither to go in and to lodge in Gibeah. And when he went in, he sat him down in the street of the city, for there was no man that took him into the house to lodging." If the Bible's putting this in here, that helps you to know that there's something wrong. They're all supposed to be family. They're all supposed to take care of each other. When they see somebody out in the street that's one of their own, they should be taking care of them. But in this city, nobody. No one. Just walk right by him. Act like he's not even there. By the way, some churches act like that too. I've been in churches where I went to as a visitor and nobody would talk to me at all. Now, I've been to the opposite too, just, you know, to be fair. But think about that. You left the big city. You didn't want to stay in one of them motels, hotels, whatever else in Jerusalem. You get to your own people, and not anybody's giving you the time of day. "And they turned aside thither to go in and to lodge in Gibeah. And when they went in, he sat him down in the street of the city." Understand, he's sitting down on the street. It's not like, it's kind of obvious what's going on here. It's not like the people around him didn't know what was going on. They saw the need, but they ignored it, just like a lot of Christians and a lot of other people today. Verse 16, and behold, there came an odd man from his work, old man from his work out of the field at evening, which was also of Mount Ephraim, and he sojourned in Gibeah, but the men of the place were Benjaminites. And when he had lifted up his eyes, he saw a wayfaring man in the street of the city, and the old man said, whither goest thou, and whence comest thou? And he said unto him, we are passing from Bethlehem, Judah, toward the side of Mount Ephraim. From thence am I, and I went to Bethlehem, Judah, but I am now going to the house of the Lord, and there is no man that receiveth me to his house. So this man's actually of the same tribe. And he says, hey, imagine this. You're sitting down in the street. This old guy comes into town. It's getting dark. He's like, where are you from? Where are you going? Because you obviously don't belong around here. I don't know if they had like license plates on the back of the mules and everything else that said not from here, or, you know, one of those kinds of things. Maybe it's in Napa Vine. You know, the city cops there when I was growing up, it's like, hey, you ain't from Napa Vine. You cross 1 mile and over in that speed limit in that school area, I'm pulling you over and you are going to get a ticket. Why? Because you're a stranger. But this old guy says he can tell this guy isn't from there. And then he learns they're of the same tribe. And then the man says, yet there's both straw and provender for asses. There is bread and wine also for me and for thy handmaid and for the young man, which is thy servants. There is no want of anything. And so he's saying, this old man saying, hey, just come on with me. We got all you need. You know, whatever you need. We got a place to put your animals. We got food for them and water for them. We got stuff for you. We'll take care of you. And in verse 20 it says, and the old man said, peace be with thee, howsoever, let all thy wants lie upon me, only lodge not in the street. That old man knows something. What does he know? You don't have to go down to Sodom and Gomorrah to see a certain kind of people. This certain kind of people... Turn over to Genesis chapter 19. Let's just go read it. Genesis chapter 19 and verse 5. So in this, two angels come into Sodom, and they come in there, and Lot finds them, and he brings them into his house. And then in verse 5 it says, let's go to verse 4. Before they lay down, the men of the city, even the men of Sodom, compassed the house round, both old and young, all the people from every quarter. You understand what that says? That means everybody's there. Doesn't matter how young or old, you're there. Verse 6. And then Lot went out at the door unto them and shut the door after him. And he said, I pray you, brethren, do not so wickedly. Behold, now I have two daughters, which have not known man. Let me, I pray you, bring them out unto you, and do ye unto them as is good in your eyes, only unto these men do nothing. For therefore came they under the shadow of my roof. And they said, stand back. And they say again, this one fellow came in to sojourn, and he will needs be a judge. Now will we deal worse with thee than with them. And they pressed sore upon the man, even Lot, and came near to break the door. But the men put forth their hand and pulled Lot into the house to them and shut the door. And they smote the men that were at the door of the house with blindness, both small and great, so that they wearied themselves to find the door. Well, isn't that just a beautiful town? We're only in Genesis 19. We can't even make it out of the book of Genesis. And it's saying there's a town that you can go to. It is not safe for you to be in the streets. It's not even safe for you to be in one of the big wigs of the town's house. Isn't that interesting? And those are the same crowd today that you will hear trumpeted over and over and again about how much they just love. They just love people. And they just, you know, they have love for other people, and they want to just get married to those other people because they just have love. Love, 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 love. Do you see a pattern? And you think, well, that's just an example. How about I give you one from my own family? I had a great uncle who went down to San Francisco one time and ill-advisedly decided he was going to go out partying with some friends. Staggering back to his hotel, he met some guys that were from this same crowd. I'm pretty sure you can fill in the blanks about what happened. And this was back in the 80s. Guess what he ended up getting? HIV. Now, it was the grace of God he didn't die of HIV. He actually died on the mission field by some basically terrorists. But that's that same loving, kind, compassionate, concerned people. You know, my first example in this crowd was I didn't know what they were. I went with Don and Arlene. Jason might have been there. I don't remember. We went up to Seattle after we moved out here. We went up there by Pike's Place where they throw the fish and everything else. And I was sitting down next to my Uncle Don. We were walking by, and there were two guys sitting down on one of those concrete things. And they looked over at my Uncle Don and said, "Oh, look at the cutie." Now, I didn't understand what was wrong with him, but I pretty much could tell by the look that I got from my uncle's face that they were very lucky they are still alive or had left that place alive, because I thought for sure he was going to kill him. I think the only reason he didn't is because I was there by him. I don't know. Could have been something else. Maybe it was the hand of God. I didn't understand what was going on. Now, let's just face it. I grew up in North Dakota, so how would I? We didn't really have that kind of a problem. See, I didn't understand back then when we moved out here, Seattle was not the Emerald City, it was the Queen City. That was its nickname, and it was that nickname for a reason. But it's that same loving crowd. Hey, there may be an exception to the rule that there's a quote-unquote nice loving one, but that doesn't make the rule. This is what the rule is. This is the truth of it. I don't care what lies they put on TV about these people. The Bible's telling you what they're really like in their heart. I don't care what letter you choose to use to describe them. Or hey, maybe you don't even fit under a letter. Guess what? We can use plus and minuses and all sorts of other stuff too. Just so you can be special. Understand, God's got a special place for you too if you don't get saved. See, that's the funny thing about God is he is so just that the hell you get is exactly what you deserve. You ever think about that? That means the Hitler's hell is different than Joe Schmo down the road. Can you imagine being one of these people that God talks about in Romans chapter 1? That you're so sick and tired of God and that conscience, that you sear your own conscience and God gets so frustrated in dealing with you, he says, can you understand how bad a position that is? Forget whatever they do in their life. Can you understand being in the position where God looks at you and says, I'm done with you. I will not listen to you ever again. That means if something happens bad to that person, they go, I'm crying out to God. You know what God says? Can't hear you. And yet people go around and today and act like God is such a loving God that he will always come running when you call. You better not try that. You better not try that. There are times that you need to listen to God and pay attention to him. Why? Because you may be on a position where something really bad's coming your way and God's not going to listen. And I mean you, Christian, it can happen to you too. There are times when you're going to get yourself in a fix and you're going to do one of those Hail Mary prayers, which is like, oh God, please get me out of this. And God goes, you haven't talked to me in how long? That's not when you want to be doing the whole, you know, oh, I need to repent for a whole bunch of stuff before God's really going to want to talk to me. This is not good timing. Yeah, you're right, it's not good timing. Keep short accounts. Back to Judges chapter 19. Now as they are making their hearts merry, behold, the men of the city, certain sons of Belial, beset the house round about and beat at the door and spake to the master of the house of the old man, saying, bring forth a man that came into thine house that we may know him. We're not looking for girls. We're looking for men. We're looking for boys. You know, it's pretty interesting that whole thing about how perverse people get. There was a young man who is a Muslim I became acquainted with through technology and everything else, and we got talking religion and everything else, and come to find out, as one of the things the Muslims don't like to tell you about is they select and groom boys. And those boys' purpose are to service the bigwigs in the local, you know, hierarchy of the religion. He was one of those. But, you know, hey, they just love people. You know, they just get along with everybody everywhere. You know, they have those rules. Isn't it interesting? The Muslims are just like the Jews. Their traditions overwrite the writings of their own leader. They'll tell you, oh, hey, the Bible's a good thing. Yeah, but you don't follow it. So how good is it? By the way, that applies to us Christians too. How well do we follow the book we supposedly believe? What a sad thing to think here in Judges, the situation this man's in. He's in where his own family, these are relations. And the man said to the master of the house, went out unto them and said unto them, nay, my brethren, nay, I pray you, do not so wickedly, seeing that this man is coming to mine house, do not this folly. What is it? This man's under my protection. He's in my house. I have a responsibility to God to take care of him. Behold, here is my daughter, a maiden, and his concubine. Them I will bring out now, and humble ye them, and do with them what seemeth good unto you. But unto this man do not so vile a thing. But the men would not hearken to him. You know what the sad thing is in this whole thing? Is you don't see anywhere in here this man or them sitting down and going, you know what, we need to pray to God right now. We need to pray for the Lord to show up and take care of this. We need God Almighty to send an angel or whatever he wants down here to take care of this situation. But what does he do? He's just like a good 21st century American. Oh, we got this. We'll take care of it. Yeah, you took care of it. So the man took his concubine and brought her forth unto them, and they knew her and abused her all the night until the morning, and when the day began to spring, they let her go. Then came the woman in the dawning of the day and fell down at the door of the man's house where her lord was till it was light. And her lord rose up in the morning and opened the doors of the house and went out to go his way. And behold, the woman, his concubine, was fallen down at the door of the house and her hands were upon the threshold. And he said unto her, up and let us be going. But none answered. Understand, the servant's with him right now. So I'm going to tell you what I think happened. They abused her so much, she ended up making it back to the door and died. She's dead at the door. The servant and everybody else knows what happened to her. Nobody's talking. You know what? That isn't like a lot of Christians. What? They won't talk out about what's evil. You know how come Hitler had so much sway in Europe and everywhere else? Because you had a whole bunch of people that would not call evil, evil. And if you're a Christian and you won't call evil, evil, shame on you. Shame on you. And when he was, if we continue on, he picks her up, puts her on the ass, takes her home. When he gets home, it says in verse 29, and when he was come into his house, he took a knife, laid hold of his concubine, and divided her together with her bones into 12 pieces, and sent her unto all the coast of Israel. I don't know about you, but can you imagine the UPS truck pulling up there? You know, all the dust peels off because, you know, it's like Eastern Washington over there. Comes out with, you know, one of them brown wrap packages, maybe a little, you know, twine on there. Here's your package. You open it up, and it's part of a woman's body. I don't know about you, but that ain't something that normally happens. I don't even see that on TV. And it was so that all that saw it said, there is no such deed done nor seen from the day that the children of Israel came up out of the land of Egypt unto this day. Consider of it, take advice, and speak your minds. Now I'm going to close here with just this one thought out of this verse. It says that the children of Israel came up out of the land of Egypt unto that day. What in the world did the children of Israel see in Egypt? You know, the type of the world, Egypt. Understand what they're saying, what's going on right now with this whole situation, nobody had seen since, guess what? They'd been in Egypt. Do you understand how vile and wicked and evil Egypt is? To have been lumped in here, and now when you hear that whole story about what about the leeks and the onions? Are you out of your mind? What is wrong with you? That you have allowed evil to become so normal in your life that it doesn't even affect you. Well, you will not call it evil. That you'll just let it, oh, well, it's just them. you ought to be ashamed of yourselves. And I don't mean to that as you as an individual. I mean as a culture. The fact that all the way back in Genesis 19 and here in the book of Judges, you have somebody that comes into your town and can't be safe. How sick is that? See, when I grew up in North Dakota, where I lived, it was Mayberry RFD. If you came into town and sat on the park bench and slept the whole night, guess what? You'd be there in the morning. You'd probably be pretty uncomfortable. You'd probably have a lot of dust in your mouth and nose, but you'd still be there. But we got Christians today that are so comfortable, they won't call evil evil anymore.